I guess was it would be correct to say that. Well, I don't think it's correct to say after your neoprene work in the rubber lab and so on. What other important things were happening in that period over Chambers Works with you?
Well, with me, of course, I still had to spend a lot of time at the Chambers Works back in the days of handling both rubber chemicals as they were made and being sure that we had the proper quality of rubber chemicals and making what the industry wanted. And the same was true of organizing a quality group in Louisville that would maintain the quality, day-to-day quality of neoprene as it was made, because that was very, very important. So that was all under the same control of the same group. Although that came under manufacturing, we felt responsible for the personnel there and the quality of the work they were doing.
Did somewhere along in there you built a separate rubber laboratory and split off from the technical
lab? That was built in Akron, yes. That was built as a service laboratory in Akron, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And it was manned with experienced people both from here and from industry.
Don't I recall that when I was there, rubber laboratory was a separate from technical lab?
Yes, that broke off. I forgot just what year it was. It became a rubber chemicals division when that was established as a rubber chemical division, a separate division rather than a part of OrChem. Right. And that time the laboratory was set up independent.
Okay. Now, I made a list of some of the polymeric products and inventions that DuPont commercialized subsequent to neoprene.
That's all after my day. I don't know.
I was just questioning whether you had anything to do with butacite resin or sheeting.
No,
was over in the
not one bit, no.
Quatamonia department.
Right, probably. Yes, that's right.
How about... But being in the rubber lab, you're probably familiar with Cordura rayon tire cord.
Well, yes, but our interest in that was in the adhesive that was put on the cord so that the rubber or the nip or whatever you're going to use would stick to the cord, but with this adhesive.
So that the textile fibers was developing that, I guess.
Yes, yes.
They worked with you, though, to...
Well, did a lot of evaluation work on it, yeah. But they worked with industry quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. How about Teflon?
Teflon had nothing to do with Teflon. That was with the Freon group.
Right, and you...
No, we never...
They were pretty separate.
Never
the
guys had,
and the
yeah, we never had anything to do with that.
Rubber... chemicals.
That's right. The rubber chemicals never had anything to do with it.
Very cool, though. People in the Jackson lab, people jumped back and forth from group to group a bit. Some of the diet chemists ended up in the rubber programs, didn't they?
Well, if I could see a list of names, I could probably tell you who did what, but to pick them out of my memory isn't much good.
You did mention adiprene earlier.
Oh, yes. Adiprene, you saw it there. That was a good product. The only trouble with it was that it's difficult to get something to adhere to it. And secondly, it would fail under heat.
Yes.
For example, you perhaps heard the classical where they had built some tires and adiprene tread. It wore wonderfully until they made a panic stop and then...
No. I was in the adiprene task force when I first came here in 1953-54, and until the project was killed.
An awfully good product. We just kept it. Well, that piece there, I don't know how many years old it is, but it's about as good as it was when it was made.
That was a Well, I remember talking with Harold Alley. He had invited us over, a bunch of the young chemists over for lunch one day, just about at the end of that. And, I guess the main thing he was commenting about was that the when they'd started that out, the price of natural rubber and the GRS was something like 20, 25 cents a pound.
Oh, yeah. Well, rubber.
No, it was 50 cents a pound, I think, maybe. And it was going down.
And natural rubber was 3 cents a pound when we tried to get into the market.
And when was this?
About 32.
Okay. But neoprene was
2.5.
We were going to compete with natural rubber.
Yeah. I think neoprene cost us $5, and we sold it for 2.5, and rubber was selling at three and a half cents.
Well, the Adaprene story, were you much involved with that? Or just
only in evaluating it.
No. I don't suppose DuPont ever recovered its investment in that project.
Doubt it.
They finally got some polyurethane products out of it. Isocyanates business. So that was a failure.
I remember the urethane.
Yeah. How about Hypalon?
Well, Hypalon came over to us from the experimental station, and with it was name. And at first, it was a very, very difficult process. Very difficult process. Until you had something that you could process on conventional rubber machinery, you wouldn't get the industry to accept it.
Uh-huh.
And that was all when they finally. Then when they got about the time that I left, they were beginning to get into improving the quality of it so that it could be handled and processed. And now I guess it's really a good commodity.
I haven't been or seen much about it still.
So it was just in the early days of evaluation.
Yeah.
If you got it into a product, it was very, very efficient. It had a lot of very good qualities. But at the time that I left, it was still impossible to really to process it.
How about, of course, lacquer spandex fiber came out of the polyurethane research eventually, but that was fibers.
Yes, but you see, that we had practically nothing to do with that.
How about Nordel hydrocarbon rubber? That was.
I don't know. That's again. You see, these things are mostly after my day.
The research was going on in that while you were.
Yes, still, I know of Nordel, but it was not an important factor at all.
Okay, you, going back a bit, you made a European trip to IG Farben and ICI in 1936, and I have looked
that's
through
all right. Did you ever see my report?
Yeah, I looked through your report.
Say, I think in that folder there that I gave you there, I think is a carbon copy of the report that I submitted.
I have the report, and I did look through it, and
well, yeah, that looks like it.
It raised some interesting questions. First, how did this trip come about?
The Germans very obviously knew they wanted to prepare for war. And they knew that they ought to, if they were going to end the war, that they had to have a rubber. And they couldn't very well depend on natural rubber. They couldn't hoard enough to carry them through any intensive war. And they knew how to make butadiene products, but where were they going to get the raw material? Their oil wasn't available, but they had plenty of coal. And when they heard that we were making coal from acetylene, their ears popped right up, and they wanted to make a swap. They wanted to swap their butadiene styrene rubber for, they're willing to make some kind of a commercial swap. They could have neoprene, we could have the butadiene. So I went over there to demonstrate to them the quality of neoprene, see what you could do with neoprene, and to take a good look at their butadiene product. That's why I went over there into Germany. Of course, I also went over into England and made the whole round of all the rubber companies over there, selling them neoprene, what they could do with it.
From this report, you actually went in and compounded with them and helped them evaluate.
Yes, sure. They were very cooperative, cooperative.
What was the what was your feeling about the political atmosphere then as far as you went over?
Well,
we went over on the German ship, the Bremen.
Went over on the German ship. Dorothy was with me. And we were treated very, very well. Of course, they wanted something, you see. And they really wined us and dined us and all that. I'm sure it didn't have a damn bit of influence on me, but I think, well, I met the president of E.G. Farben and his wife, entertained in his home, which is an unheard of thing, really, because their home life of most any of the Germans is pretty private. But anyway, we were put up in the casino in Leverkusen, which was a place where they entertained their people. Very, very nice place, very nice accommodation. We had anything in the way of food that we would even think of, and yet they didn't. People that didn't have it outside, except that we did have the Eintopfessen. That is, once a week you had this one pot or whatever it is, usually a bowl of heavy soup of some sort, or what we'd call a beef stew or something like that, and the difference between the what it would cost to provide a regular meal and the Eintopfessen was supposed to go into charity, the winter help, they called it. That was what you saw from the point of view from the inside. Of course, we had got to know some of the workings of the people. One of the things I'll always remember, they asked me if I'd like to go down to the and have lunch with the work people. So I yes, I'd like to do it. So we went in, we sat down at a long table on a bench, and they brought out a herring, raw herring. They'd stripped the skin off the thing, and it sat there, head on, eyes looking up at you, and a big piece of bread and a stein of beer, and that was your lunch. Well, I'd never eaten raw fish before. That's a little rough to take, but just as an example, always glad I did it. I remember, and Dorothy remembers this, when she got to know some of the people there a lot better than I did, particularly the wives. And there was one wife of the head of this whole rubber works. What was his name? I can't think of it. But anyway, his wife had been through and knew something of what war was, the First World War. And she used to say over and over, my wife talked, booked German very well. I could understand a good deal of German and talk a little bit in those days. She was terrified that war was coming on. She had her family been wiped out in the First World War. She had a boy and a girl, and she just couldn't face the fact that they were going to be cannon fodder. And she often cried on Dorothy's shoulders what was ahead of them. Well, what was the man's name, Dot, that was, Dot? Who was the man who was ahead of that work at the rubber? Hair director, what? His wife was your friend over there. I can't hear her.
Was it the Leverkusen or the...
At Leverkusen. The director there. Well, I didn't know his name immediately if you mentioned it. should be right up in the start there. Here, Fritz Tamara, he was the managing director that I told you about, we met. And the manager, Leverkuhn, was Kieran. I met him, Stangen associate, Conrad, Herr Director Dr. Conrad, Eric Conrad. He was the fellow. Well, we were in the middle of the night, we were in bed, and we heard this bang on the door like you'd taken a cane and bang on the door. And I knew this fellow, Conrad, had been working with him. We were very familiar, working day after day. But I got up and I was put on the bathroom, went to the door. Heil Hitler! He stood there just like a statue, clicked his heels, and Heil Hitler. And he said, Winterhelf. And never didn't recognize me at all. And he put out his hand and wanted money. He said, this goes to Hitler's winter help for the poor people. And he was dressed as a brown charter, brown uniform, boots, the whole thing. Just absolutely transformed from the man that I knew in daytime in the laboratories. And this. Another instance.
And now, was this the...
This was the Leverkusen.
This was the man whose wife was...
Yes, and it was his wife that was so terribly concerned about it, and talked to Dorothy, but of course, just between the two girls, so to speak.
Then go on, you were going to mention something.
Well, these other people are all people that I knew very well. Heubaum and Paul Sterklin, Koch, Lechlein, they were all nice chaps. I'm sure they were all Nazis except Koch. And I'm sure he wasn't, because he was terrified of what was going to happen. And he confided a lot in me about it. I'll come back to him later on. Yeah. Another incident that we were in Munich. We went over to Munich for a weekend, Dorothy and I. And in the middle of the night, we heard this crunch, 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 crunch of soldiers, of steps. We heard the clatter, clatter, clatter of hoofs. We heard the rattling of harnesses and the turning of heavy wheels on cobblestone. We looked out the window, and as far as you could see were troops, artillery, horse-drawn, all no motorized. It was the March on the Rhine. I immediately got dressed and went down to the desk. What's going on here? Nobody knew. I came upstairs and I said to Dora, get yourself into some clothes and pick up our bags. We're going to leave. So in the morning we got up, we got down, went to the railroad station, took the first train to Paris, opened the newspaper that I bought on the street. Nazis had moved on to the Rhine. A little later on, I had a friend over there that was a friend here at, I had worked with in at Fisk Rubber Company, and he was the plant manager for the Engelbert Rubber Company in Aachen, Germany. We went over there to spend the weekend with him, and one day I was in the plant with him, and I was, of course, selling to the Engelbert Rubber Company our products, and Engelbert having been always been a very good customer. And afterwards, we were still there. Everybody had gone, and this chap, Mel, said to me, Bill, he said, I want to show you something. He says, come on. We walked out into the middle of the factory there at the German plant of the Engelbert Rubber Company, pulls up a trap door and he says, let's go down. It was stocked with food, water. He says the whole blame Rhine Valley around here, people could go underground and stay underground. It's simply a war preparation. It should be the equivalent of bomb-proof shelter. Well, the upshot was Dorothy and I came home from Europe just feeling certain that war was going to break out. So you asked me what I saw.
That was precisely the question, because I think...
Those three incidents...
I was getting very, very, very concerned about and very interested in foreign affairs at that time, and my recollection is hazy, but I'm sure by 36 or 37...
Oh, it was obvious.
The U.S. public must have been aware that they were gearing up for war.
They were aware of it, but casually aware of it, I think.
Yeah, that must have hit you with considerable.
Oh, it did. We came back. We were just shaken up about it. It was just so obvious that the war was about to come.
You mentioned being in Munich, and I was looking at part of your itinerary.
Yeah. Then we went to Berchtesgaden.
Yeah, it's spelled here Berchtesgaden, B-E-R-T-H-E.
Yeah. That's it. That's up in the German Alps.
That's where Hitler had his...
It was, and very interestingly, while we were there, we stayed in a place called the Kurhaus, as I remember it, which was a very nice residential sanitarium, I guess you might call it. It's beautiful surroundings, beautiful Alps around there, and he had his so-called eagle nest. One day, a day or so after we got there, there was a courier came down and presented Herr Hitler's
compliments.
His compliments, and regretted that he couldn't invite us up to the eagle nest, but his schedule was such that he wasn't able to invite us up during the short stay that we'd planned to be there.
So your visit was that important to them?
They wanted that neoprene.
There was some trouble later. Antitrust investigations or congressional hearings? Did that pertain?
I didn't get involved. I was not involved at all.
IG Farben visit or?
Well, I was never involved in that in any way at all. No. I saw Hitler there once, though, when I was at Leverkusen. We did some of our work in working with the Continental Gummi Fabriken in Hanover. And I was in Hanover one time when it was said we going to be a big deal. Everybody has to assemble out in the main atrium, which being the five or six floors, but they all had balconies around each, and you looked down. Herr Hitler came in and delivered a speech. I couldn't understand what he spoke. He spoke because it was a Platt Deutsch, and he spoke rapidly.
Yeah.
But I saw the man. I saw him go through the emotions.
Were you impressed?
Not particularly, no. I just kind of thought it was just somebody ranting. I didn't know much about who Hitler was at that time. I kept hearing, because Heil Hitler, everybody you saw was Heil Hitler, Heil Hitler.
What was your feeling during this visit about the quality of the IG Farben and the German industry in general compared to
Well, tip top. Couldn't help but be impressed with it. The plant wasn't too different than the old dye works. I mean, just a hodgepodge of various operations. But still, the people that I talked to, I thought were very high quality, competent, technical men.
You commented in your report about the cleanliness of some of the compounding laboratories.
Oh, yes.
Places that you visited.
Places you worked. Of course, I was always kind of a bear that you can't do good work in a sloppy place. And I used to think that was a little rough on the boys. You should think sometimes at the laboratory I'd complain if things weren't just spick and span, because I felt that you do good work, you You had to have a good place to work in. Be careful. Clean. One of the things we did over there was, you've heard of the German Autobahn.
Yes.
We built tires and took them out on the Autobahn. It was a day very much like this. Rainy, cold, and we ran those tires on the Autobahn to, we ran them 100 kilometers an hour speed, 120. I think we got up to about 120, which would be, about 70 miles an hour. Those tires got so hot that you could, that when it stopped, you see the steam come right off. That was one of the troubles, of course, with neoprene, that,
yes,
you know, they heat up.
Now, they gave you quite a bit of information on the various Buna's,
yes,
Buna S.
Yes.
Let's
see, Buna S,
really.
Buna S was butadiene styrene, and the other was...
Butadiene was butadiene
nitrile. Yes, that's right. Well, that was a very tough one, and that's the one that was very, very oil resistant. Very oil resistant. And the butadiene styrene needed to have a lot of work done on processing, which was done when we got the, our government just confiscated the patent, so to speak. We started making it during the war.
Okay, that was... That goes on to some questions about... let's see, there were some IG patents on emulsion polymerization that...
I had nothing. I wasn't involved in that.
Some
in
comment
way.
There that...
No, I think the one to comment on that would be Starkweather, and he's gone.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to... we're getting into some of your public involvement then. According to something I picked up, Hayden and Bridgewater testified before the Baruch Committee in August 1942.
Yes, that was on the need of a synthetic rubber,
right.
Particularly the need of... You had to have a certificate of necessity to get the materials to make build a plant. And, of course, we wanted to build... We saw a need and wanted to build a plant, and our plant was to be 10,000 ton production, and we had a place in Louisville, Louisville being have plenty of limestone, plenty of coal, and had an agreement with because Louisville Gas and Electric for power, they would take care of the power that we would need. We could make our own acetylene and go ahead and produce the chloroprene.
You made everything then at Louisville,
yeah.
to make the acetylene?
Yeah.
Later, we bought some acetylene from carbide down there.
Yes, yes.
At Louisville.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the initial plant didn't involve carbide?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think we made our own. I remember it. Now, wait a minute. Let me back up on that. I think we bought the... yes, that's right. We made the HCl. We bought the carbide. We bought the acetylene. That's
the acetylene,
right. Yeah, we bought the acetylene, and we made the we made the HCl. That's right. Then we put the acetylene and
now what? All I know is that we were buying carbide.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, and then we went up to. And we went up to Marquette, there up near in Michigan.
Montague, Michigan.
There we bought, that was sitting right on a salt dome.
Okay, that was for the HCl.
That's
where they tried to run or did run the arc acetylene
process. Right, and we bought our HCl.